1248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. President Biden has unveiled his budget plan. CBS's Stephen Portnoy has the story.
The president's budget includes a number of ideas that failed to advance when Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, including hundreds of billions of dollars for child and elder care and universal preschool. To pay for it all, Mr. Biden would raise the corporate tax rate, impose a new wealth tax on America's richest families, and increase rates on married couples earning over $450,000 a year. The budget allows the president to contrast his plans with Republicans.
They want to cut tax for the wealthy and large corporations.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy calls the Biden budget completely unserious. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley is proposing her own reforms to big budget federal programs.
I'm Steve Dorsey in Washington.
We need to fix it.
Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley told an Iowa crowd she'd support reforms to Social Security and Medicare.
So the first thing you do is you change the retirement age of the young people coming up, so that we can try and have some sort of system for them.
Haley says those benefits should also be limited for the rich.
Democrats are supporting raising taxes on the wealthy. The CEO of Norfolk Southern was on Capitol Hill today testifying about that train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio.
Alan Shaw apologized, saying he is deeply sorry.
We've been cooperating fully with the NTSB's investigation.
The CEO said so far there is no indication that those on board the train did anything wrong.
The preliminary report found that the Norfolk Southern crew was operating the train below the speed limit and in an approved manner.
But he said it's clear the safety mechanisms in place were not enough. He promised improvements.
I'm going to make sure they've got the right training and the right technology.
That's CBS's Steve Futterman with that report. Well wishes pouring in as Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell recovers at a Washington, D.C. hospital. CBS's Nicole D'Antonio.
A spokesperson for the Kentucky Republican says he tripped at a local hotel during a private dinner. He has been admitted to the hospital where he is receiving treatment.
The 81-year-old Republican leader suffered a concussion. A massive Russian missile barrage rained down on sections of Ukraine last night. CBS's MTS Taib is in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro.
The far west of the country, Lviv, which has largely been spared the kind of devastation we've seen in the east of the country. You see homes reduced to rubble. You see people having lost their lives, lying in their beds.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson with the agency's top priority.
NASA is laser focused on Mars.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
When you're rolling Charmin up to soft on the potty, let's just muscle roll it back, everybody. Charmin's irresistibly soft and hella nice. The crib is always stocked.
It's our potty.
Charmin Ultra Soft is irresistibly soft and more absorbent, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Hi, this is Drew Barrymore. Do you know what my idea of the perfect night is? First, make a bunch of complicated plans, and then cancel all those plans. Instead, spend the night streaming movies and TV shows on Pluto TV for free, including my show. There are tons of live channels and even more on demand. Free to stream all you want on Pluto TV and never pay a thing. Stream now, pay never. Pluto TV.
United Way of Southwood in Adams Counties invites all women to join us for the 12th annual Power of the Purse, Tuesday, March 14th at Bullseye Golf Club from 5 to 7:30 p.m. Power of the Purse is a fundraiser to support early grade literacy hosted by Women United. There will be a purse silent auction, raffles, online auction, and great food. All thanks to our diamond sponsors, Alliant Energy, Aspirus Health, Connexus Cares, Ginzel Insurance Agency, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Paul Gross Jewelers, Prevail Bank, Walker Cranberry, and Williams Plumbing and Heating. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit uwswac.org or call 715-425-4255. 421-0390.
Weather brought to you by you and your great business. For just $100 a week, this sponsorship is designed to make your phones ring.
But the offer absolutely ends March 15th. Log on civicmedia.us/weather. civicmedia.us/weather.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. A paper magnate's Wausau mansion was bought by the director of the Rainbow House. Courtney Olson, director of a domestic violence agency located in Marionette and Oconto, saw the D.C. Everest mansion for sale late last year. Olson, along with her fiancé, Felix Gallo, a computer executive with Amazon, put an offer in on the house. The three-story Mediterranean-style villa is on the National Registry of Historic Places and the crown jewel of Wausau's Highland Park Historic District. The couple plans to find ways to share their new home with the community. And they plan to get married in the mansion as they settle into Wausau community. A liberal political action committee that supports Democrats is releasing hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of TV and radio ads across Wisconsin and other battleground states. The ads, from American Bridge 21st Century, tout the Biden administration's effort to lower insulin costs and protect Social Security and Medicare and rebuild infrastructure. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Daytime highs approaching 29 this afternoon under cloudy skies with a few flurries possible at times. Northerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tonight, lows level off around 3 above. Mainly sunny tomorrow, high of 32. Mid-40s Wednesday and Thursday with a chance for scattered showers Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 24.
To be here to speak directly to the woke mob.
I laugh so much in this job. It just makes me happy.
Don't boo. Vote.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Jane Matnair. She is Kristen Bry, who just dropped out of our StreamYard feed. So I am here with Eileen Newcomer. Eileen, you are with the League of Women Voters. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, from what we understand, it has been challenging for the League of Women Voters in the last few years with getting all of the candidates to come and speak at your forums. Can you tell us what's going on with that?
Sure. Yeah, we have a long history of trying to help inform voters, empower them by providing them opportunities to learn about the candidates. And so it's a longstanding thing that we've been doing. And unfortunately, in more recent years, fewer and fewer candidates are choosing to participate in our candidate forums. But honestly, we're not alone in this. I know that we're talking about the league's perspective, but I've also heard from other organizations that fewer candidates are participating in their activities as well. But when that happens, it's a loss for voters. So our focus is always on voters and trying to empower them so that they can find information, so they can be informed and responsible citizens when they go and vote. And it's just unfortunate when certain candidates choose not to participate.
I'm curious, Eileen, as to, do they give you any reason as to why they won't participate? Or is it just, thanks for asking, but no thanks?
You know, the polite answer, thanks for asking, but no thanks. You know, I guess if somebody's not going to participate, that might be the best case scenario, is that they say, thank you, but no thank you. Sometimes we get ghosted by candidates and they don't respond to our inquiries asking them to participate. And some, you know, sometimes they do say, you know, we don't think that you speak to our base of voters, and so we want to focus on other activities. It really depends on the candidate and what their individual reasons are for not participating. We hear the full scope of things, of why.
Kristen, are you there?
I am here. Sorry about that. The internet decided to be a little bit glitchy. And so, Eileen, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And so, Jane, what was your first question?
Just what kind of, when they invite politicians to come and speak, what reasons do they give for not coming? And I find it interesting, Eileen, that they say that these aren't necessarily our voters, but everyone who votes is a voter. I don't understand why they feel like they aren't addressing people who might vote for them.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. And I feel similarly. And so sometimes it is hard for us to kind of understand why people are choosing not to participate. And I think that some candidates maybe have a preconceived notion of who a league member is and how they would vote maybe in a certain way, even though we're a nonpartisan organization, we're staunchly nonpartisan. All of our members are doing this work because they believe in the power of nonpartisan voter education and voter advocacy work. So it is like a little bit mind-boggling. But I think something that candidates and maybe other voters don't realize is that we reach way beyond just our core membership as well. And so in my mind, they're doing the candidates who choose not to participate are doing themselves a disservice, in addition to a disservice to the voters, because they're missing out on an opportunity to reach, to get their message in front of a ton of voters that are looking to the league for unbiased information. And you know, we do try. We are really careful about when we reach out to candidates to make sure that we're not treating one more favorably than another. So if we send an email to one candidate, we send an email to all the candidates. Or if they do phone calls to one candidate, we do phone calls to all the candidates to make sure that everyone gets the same number of touches and number of times for us encouraging them to participate. But we certainly don't want it to seem like we're recruiting one candidate to an event or an activity harder than another candidate.
And so I guess that's a good question as far as how many voters are you reaching as far as like across the state and in the different communities? Because obviously I see you guys on online, but like what are all the different channels of communication that you're reaching people?
Yeah, we try to be multifaceted because we know that people get information and consume information very differently from one person to the next. So, you know, we do our outreach on social media. We do programs like this and, you know, try to get on radio shows. We also do radio ads. We're in newspapers. We're in the community at like farmers markets or at the library or in high schools or on college campuses. We really do try to reach out to a wide swath of people. And we do have 20 local leagues around the state who do community specific engagement work in their communities as well. And they know where most people are going in their communities. And so we do have a pretty broad geographical reach as well. And just some numbers that I have on the top of my head is, so I work very closely with our voter guide on vote411.org. And that's another resource that we have to provide voters with information about the candidates. And we send questionnaires to the candidates and ask them to fill them out and then publish verbatim whatever the candidate wants to say on a specific question. Or, you know, if for some reason they don't want to answer the question that we ask, if they want to say, I don't like the league and this is why, like, I'm not going to touch that information. Yeah. I'll publish whatever they want to say. That's their space to say what they want to say. But anyway, so that's an information source that we have for the candidate, or for voters to learn about the candidates. And every year we reach tens of thousands of voters. So we were just under 100,000 voters in the midterms, looking at our Wisconsin specific voter guide.
Wow. And so, and then I guess going back to the original, that there is the problem you're running into is the fact that there's more and more Republican candidates who don't want to be part of the forum. They're not responding to the questionnaires that about where their stances are. And that information always goes to vote 411, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so what is the new tactics or what are the new solutions to that problem that the league is trying to implement?
Yeah, you know, so we are trying to be creative in the ways that we get information about the candidates. One of the ways that we're doing that is finding new partnerships and supplementing the information that we have from candidates on Vote 411, whether that is, like, I'll individually do the research on all the candidates and find their websites, and if they have social media links on their websites, we publish that right alongside their biographical information. And we've got a really great partnership with Wisconsin Eye to also link their candidate interviews to our page on Vote 411 as well. So they have they also have some issues with some candidates participating and others not. But it's interesting because sometimes we get candidates that respond to us that don't respond to them and vice versa.
Oh, interesting.
And so by being able to collaborate, we're able to have kind of more comprehensive candidate information on both platforms. And then for as far as like community events, one of the things that I know a lot of our local leagues have been pivoting to from candidate forums is to do like one-on-one recorded interviews with the candidates. You know, partially because, you know, having everyone show up at one location on a certain time of day can be more challenging. And so we're trying to look at, you know, our structure and framework to make sure we're being as flexible as possible. So we give candidates multiple opportunities to participate as well. And so having these one-on-one recorded interviews can be, you know, conducted over a span of several days rather than just one time in one location. But I've also heard some really exciting events as well, like kind of like candidating events where all the candidates in a local area are invited to come and participate. And then members of the public are invited to come and have kind of more one-on-one conversations with the candidates rather than having kind of the prepared marks or having to respond to questions in front of everyone, having more, like I said, one-on-one conversations with the candidates.
That sounds super interesting. And so we're talking to Eileen Newcomer, who is the voter education manager at the League of Women Voters Wisconsin. And I guess, and this is more maybe of a philosophical question, as far as, because at least when I first read this in the Journal Sentinel article about the new approach that you all are taking, you know, the pushback from Republicans is that they're trying to pigeonhole you as like a left-leaning organization. And so that there's two... There's the voter information arm of League of Women Voters, and then there's certain issues that the league takes a stance on as far as where they fall, right?
Right.
And so I guess, like, in this day and age where everything is so partisan and, like, it's so many things are black and white, red or blue. And so, like, how do you exist as a non, how much pressure is there to not take a stance if you're going to be nonpartisan? Or, like, how does that definition of nonpartisan, despite what it actually means, which is you don't choose a party, but you can choose a side, like take a side on an issue, like how does that work right now and the conversations that you have internally?
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to try to answer what I think you're asking.
Okay.
Is how do we stay nonpartisan when we have positions on certain issues and they tend to align maybe with one party or another at a certain period of time. And so like, how do we navigate that? Because that can be really challenging. And, you know, people's perception is kind of like what they've seen and what they know versus like the 100-year history of the league. Right. And so they don't actually know what it was like 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and that sort of thing. So for me, I kind of like to ground it in, you know, what is our like guiding principle or our North Star? And for me, it's always voters and empowering voters to make their voices heard. Like, I'm not here to tell people how to vote or who to vote for or that sort of thing. And so that's really kind of like how we separate our voter services specific work and engaging voters. It's like we want them to have the tools and resources to make an informed decision. And then on the advocacy side of it, all of our positions come from study and consensus from our members. And we don't switch a position on a certain issue just because a certain party has switched their position on that issue. We are consistent and we go forward. And one of the ones that I think...
I'm going to stop you right there, Eileen, sure. And let you finish the question when we come back from the next break, because we have to go break.
Right.
But we'll finish that question and then also talk about more information you need to know as the audience coming up 3 weeks from now. We got the spring election. So our guest is Eileen Newcomer, who's the voter.
Would you like job security along with great pay and benefits? Panagold, the bakers of Country Hearth bread products, offers a starting wage of over $20 an hour, medical and dental coverage, paid holidays, retirement funding, and opportunities for growth and advancement. Panagold has many positions throughout the bakery, so chances are good there's going to be a fit for you that will work with your schedule. Currently, there are openings for production, sanitation, maintenance, shipping, and delivery drivers. Find out more and apply today at countryhearthjobs.com.
What's that smell? You smell that? I hear that same thing every day. I'm Crust Buster Crockett, and I can tell you, I sure do smell that. That there's the sweet smell of cherry pie. That's the only thing you smell when Crockett's septic pumper trucks come a-rolling down the road to pump your septic and holding tanks. Hoo-wee! They sure do a good job keeping your system clean, and Crockett Septic can also take care of your porta-potty rentals, too. Just give them a call. 715-712-3456. Tell them Crust Buster Crockett sent you.
Crockett Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks and septics pump right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you too. They'll pump away that stinky nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whiff. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their bumper trucks smell just like cherry pie. Yeehaw!
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Eileen Newcomer, who is the Voter Education Manager for League of Women Voters Wisconsin. And we were talking the first segment she was here about the adjustments the league is making, because there's more and more Republican candidates who do not want to partake in their forums or answer their questionnaires. And that led to the question as far as a nonpartisan organization, you are allowed to have stances on issues. And yet having those stances then pegs you as partisan, but that is not the case. And so I had to cut you off because we're going to break. So I want to make sure to let you finish your thought.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I totally understand you have to cut people off and have the break. That makes sense. But I just was going to mention as an example, the issue of gerrymandering. And I know that's one that seems very partisan here in Wisconsin. But when you look at it, the full scope of how it affects voters in other states, like looking at Illinois or some of our states out east, it's not necessarily the Republicans that are gerrymandering the states for partisan gain. And so this is like an issue that we have come to through consensus and having our position and really focusing on wanting to have every voter have a voice and have voters pick politicians rather than the other way around. And even in Wisconsin, this is an issue that has changed as the legislature has changed as well, because when obviously now the legislature is Republican controlled, but it has been democratically controlled in the past, and we were advocating for fair maps at that time as well, and those legislators did not pass fair maps. So it's yep. You know, it's something that changes as the who's in power changes, but the league does not change how we advocate and what our stance is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a good point. There is back in 2009, they had all three chambers and they could have put fair maps in, and we would have been in a very different place than we are right now as a state. All right. Well, we have a very important election coming up. I guess every election is important in Wisconsin, but this one coming up, I think everyone is talking about a lot, because obviously the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, but that it's not the only race on anyone's ballot. And so as far as with 3 weeks and a day to go, what are some of the most important information that you and the league is trying to get out there so that people can have all the information they need to get out and vote?
Sure. Yeah, I think some of the most important information is, you know, what's on your ballot. So like what you just talked about, the Supreme Court race, is a lot of people are aware of it and what's happening with that, but there are a number of other judicial elections on the ballot as well, including Court of Appeals, circuit court. And then there's a lot of really important local races in addition to that. Like, I know Madison has a mayoral race. I believe Racine does as well. And there's a lot of like county executive races at the local level. And so definitely encourage everyone to go to My Vote and see, you know, what's on your ballot, and then go to Vote411 to find information about the candidates. And then everyone is across the state is also going to have three questions on their ballot as well, two pertaining to a bail amendment, and then one is a non-binding advisory referendum related to welfare benefits. And so definitely encourage everyone to take a look and read up on those as well, so you're prepared to go and vote. And I think other important information is just how to vote. If you haven't registered to vote in a while or haven't checked your polling place, definitely encourage you to make sure that your registration is up to date, that you know where you're going on election day if you're planning on voting in person. Or if you want to vote absentee, either by mail or in person, My Vote also has a lot of information about your options to go either vote in person, absentee, or to get a ballot by mail. I know I vote by mail because it's just very convenient. I get to have that time with my ballot and research my candidates and make informed decisions. And my partner and I, we always vote at the same time so we can be each other's witnesses. And it's kind of a special moment for us to be engaged civically and kind of do that together. So if other people would be interested in that, definitely would encourage you. It's a way that we bond as a couple. So it's a lot of fun.
Did you do that even before 2020?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's so funny how that, I didn't even think about voting absentee until the pandemic. And now it's such a such an easy default for so many people. Even if you go, because I think the last two elections, at least the ones, the primary and the fall election, I got my absentee ballot, but then I ended up still voting in person because I just brought it with me and they voided it. And so it's like, it just gives you the option that if you get to it ahead of time, otherwise they can always void it. You won't vote twice. And so I guess, but then early voting starts March 21st?
The 21st, yep.
Perfect. And because this is more of a personal question, as someone who kind of personally tries to get information, good voter information out there. And even in Wisconsin, we're in like, it is so decentralized and there are so many different, like some places have early voting, some do not, some end on different days. Like I think I stepped in it in the fall where Madison ended their early voting a day early than Milwaukee did. And I posted something wrong. So like, what is the hardest part of being a voter education manager in Wisconsin?
You know, that is, I think you kind of listed it out, is that, one of the great strengths of our system is that there's a lot of local control and municipal clerks have a lot of leeway to determine what works well for their community. But that also makes it really challenging to have one message that works for the entire state. Mm-hmm. But I will say, working with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, they're always trying to figure out ways to get information to voters in a way that makes sense. And so one of the improvements we've seen on the My Vote website is actually a tab where you can go and find your early voting options. And that's something that in the past, like I would just go to 50 different municipalities' websites and put it all on our website. And so now it's nice to have like an official link where we can send people to and they can just find their information by searching in their address. And that, yeah, it's a challenge, but you know, a worthy challenge.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Eileen Newcomer, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck in the next 3 weeks as far as the final push to get people out to vote. But this is super helpful information. And thank you for all the work that you do over at the League.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Get out and vote. I love seeing how much
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Weight restrictions on state highways will begin Monday in the North Central region. The Wisconsin DOT places seasonal weight restrictions on specific highways during the spring thaw periods to prevent damage to the pavement structure. Beginning at noon on Monday, March 13th, Wood County will see restrictions on the following roads: Wisconsin 54 and Wisconsin 173. Weight limits are 6 tons gross load for single-axle vehicles and 10 tons gross load for tandem-axle vehicles. The maximum gross weight is 24 tons. Visit the DOT website for complete information on weight-restricted roads. Wisconsin's latest winter storm has downed tree limbs and forced power company crews out to deal with outages scattered around the state. If you see downed power lines, stay away and contact your local utility. If you're supposed to be flying today, contact your airline, not the airport, to see if things are running on time. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Ironman. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Right arm, right leg.
Left leg, left arm.
Both legs above the knee.
Both legs, part of my left hand.
Lost both my legs in Iraq.
These 9/11 veterans are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and pull-down cabinets that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family. This life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans, thanks to our donors and supporters. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit hfotusa.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
My friend Teddy almost set his house on fire. He used a counterfeit, you know, a fake wall charger. He had to go to the hospital.
My big sister Jenna's face turned bright red. She was just showing people online how to use a new cream. She still has the scars.
My brother's friend Billy had to jump off his motor scooter when it caught fire. He fell and got hit by a car. He broke his leg. Blew his chances to play basketball in college.
My BFF Chloe was riding her bike and hit a ditch. Her helmet broken too. Now, she has a brain injury.
There is a cost to buying cheap. Do you want to pay the price?
Real products are tested for safety. Protect yourself. Don't fall for fake products.
Visit ncpc.org/goforreal. Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Weather brought to you by you and your great business. For just $100 a week, this sponsorship is designed to drive traffic to your website.
But the offer absolutely ends March 15th. Log on civicmedia.us/weather. civicmedia.us/weather.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Daytime highs approaching 29 this afternoon under cloudy skies with a few flurries possible at times. Northerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tonight. Lows level off around 3 above. Mainly sunny tomorrow. High of 32. Mid-40s Wednesday and Thursday with a chance for scattered showers Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 24.
Johnson summers we talked about last summer when I was on the show.
That is true, because the summer in Florida is not as fun, right?
No. I think the Florida summer is the equivalent of the Wisconsin winter.
That is probably true. Maybe Arizona's worse, but certainly not fun. But that is not what you're here to talk about. You're here to talk about the fact that basically we avoided a meltdown with Silicon Valley Bank, something that most of us, I don't even think, knew what it was prior to last week. And so we wanted to bring you on to kind of explain what the heck happened with Silicon Valley Bank. So I guess as you and I were talking about this over the weekend, let's just start with a refresh of how banks work.
All right. Well, so that can go on for a long time, but I'll try and keep that as tight as possible. If you think about money, originally people viewed money when they went off the barter system. Gold was the original money, or silver, and you would, you know, pay for that. But then what happened was banks came around, or guys came around and said, hey, you don't want to get your gold or silver stolen by, you know, Robin Hood or any pirates or whatever. And so then it was became a place where you could store your money. And then what happened was these guys were, you know, and they were smart. They said, oh, well, we'll just issue a note against your gold. And then over time, they basically created a system where it's fractional reserve. So they take your money and use it as a base against other assets where they create loans. So the most basic way, if you think about it, is your home. The average person buys a home from a bank, and the bank says, okay, you put some money up, and then you put the deposits in our bank, and then we will issue you whatever. Let's say it's $1 million. You put 200 up. Now $800,000 are created, which are future payments basically from you as an asset on their balance sheet. And so everybody's money sits in banks, and it's backed by mortgages on homes, commercial loans to businesses, you know, sometimes assets and securities, but, you know, financial assets. And what happened here was, is that, like in The Wonderful Life with George Bailey, and he shows his, like, here, this is where your money is. It's her house. It's whatever. You can't all want your money at the same time because there's not enough money for you to have it. And so basically we are in a situation where it was like an old school 1930s bank run.
And so, but it's specific because Silicon Valley Bank is not a consumer bank, right? It's not like something where you and I can go get a loan or like have a checking account there. It was specifically made for VCs, tech companies, and like Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah. So if you think about it, like, as a market participant, I have an account at Goldman Sachs, but it's not like the average person has a Goldman Sachs account. So it's kind of like that, but it's a commercial bank in the sense of it's like a VC takes in money from investors, and then he tells the guys that he gives money to as their startup investments, hey, you should use this bank for their money. And the reason why this was interesting is because this bank was basically, you know, because you used to work in tech and you had stock options and these things that were illiquid, but you knew they had value. And so as opposed to having to sell the company to get paid, they would lend against your promote in the fund or your stock options as a startup. So there's all these things they did that was very startup specific, or lend money against unprofitable companies that JP Morgan or, you know, normal banks, US Bank would not do. And so they developed a very nice niche, and that's why their deposits grew so fast. That and the fact that VC did really well over the last decade, and more people wanted to be in VC, and then COVID money, and they just got way too many deposits. And so they had created this business-to-business thing. So the issue that arose was most average people don't keep more than $250,000 in a bank, which is what the FDIC insures. This was a case where, because it's a business-to-business bank, only like 3-5% of the deposits were insured. And so there was a lot that was on the hook. And then the assets that they had to back that money had been impaired because interest rates went up. And the tech bubble crashed, essentially. So the value of their assets was less than their liabilities. And that can be okay, but not if everybody wants it at once. So essentially what happened last week was Peter Thiel and a couple other big investors pulled 40-some billion dollars of deposits in a few days, and then the word got out, and then, you know, like lemmings, everybody's just panicking, essentially. And by Friday, it was out of business.
And it is out of business. It's like, it's not getting the bank itself is not getting a bailout. Like, they're done.
Done.
And so now, and this is what happened over the weekend, right? Because it's like the bank is done. Is there no accountability? Because didn't the CEO of the bank basically like take out a bunch of shares and like he's going to be fine. Like he'll be like his money is secure.
I mean, I guess we'll see how that goes. You know, like I'm pretty sure the FDIC will try to gain assets and maybe he'll be liable for being sued. I mean, they're pretty careful. So I'm sure that his lawyer kind of gave him the okay. But yeah, it looks bad. But to be fair, I mean, all his equity's toast. So he didn't like necessarily make off great here, right? Like that guy doesn't have a job, doesn't have a business and all the equity. And he probably was a very rich man with his equity that's now, you know, worth zero. So I hear what you're saying.
James is rolling her eyes at you from that statement.
Gee, Ben, I can't tell you how badly I feel for these people.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I get it. He might have to give that money back. But, like, you know, ultimately, yes, you're correct. This was a business bank for rich people, for businesses that have a lot of money, and the venture capital community threw their arms up and they were freaking out because this was very bad for their industry. And they've done really well, so I'm pretty sure they're big donors, and they probably are the ones who got something done here to bail out the deposits, which I think is a stupid move.
So it up, though, because that's what happened over the weekend. So let's take – because when you and I talked, it wasn't a for sure thing, because basically the people who worked at the bank, some got out, whatever, but there was – the problem became all of the people who were depositors at the bank, some of whom are like Peter Thiel type wealthy and some of whom are startup guys who have like 2 million in there, not 200 million or whatever. And so the question became what to do with people who had money in there beyond $250,000. And since it's businesses, I'm assuming most, like you said, most did. And so the political question over the weekend was what happens to the depositors, right?
Yeah. I mean, so essentially what they said was initially they were going to give the 250 to everyone today and a dividend of 50% of their deposits over the course of today, tomorrow, this week, basically. I don't know exactly what day. And then they were going to go through a receivership process where they sell their assets and make good on them. Or, you know, they distribute the proceeds to all the creditors. And the depositors are the first creditors. So when you're a depositor, you have a claim on the assets of the bank. And that's one thing we should talk about just real quick, is that people should know when you have your money at the bank above $250,000, that's not your money anymore. That's just a claim on the bank. That's their money. Even though people think it's their money, ultimately banks go under. And if they don't have the assets, then you just have a claim, essentially, like you would in any business. Or if you have loan people money and they only give you what they have left, you know, so That's something that people should understand more out of this whole event, I hope.
You know, Ben, after you just said that, now I'm thinking of a nice spot in my backyard where I can dig a hole where I can keep my money.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, if everyone did that, there's not enough money for everyone to do that, first of all. And then the prices of everything would go down and the economy would be severely hurt. I mean, it's still, that might be what's going to happen anyway. But, you know, I think that the better solution is to own treasury bonds. Oh, you remember, like I told you last August, buy treasuries. Like that's been the kind of the consistent thing, is that you can buy treasury notes from the U.S. government and those are safe. Or you can, you know, buy assets. But the key idea here is that bank cash isn't as safe as you think it is above $250,000. Now, look, the government came in and said, hey, we're going to make everybody whole. And so for now, but like, for example, First Republic Bank was down 75% today because people were worried and people were pulling out. Some people that we know have moved significant amounts of money. I mean, there was a genuine level of fear and panic out there, and that causes the problem itself. You know what I mean? It's like fear is actually the problem with this. Because even in 08 and 98 and some of these times, things work themselves out over time, but it's the demand for instant liquidity against bad funding or assets that are somewhat impaired that create this mismatch. And then banks go under, you know, they go, and It shouldn't be surprising, though, because like if you think about it, over the last 100 years, there's been so many banks that have gone out of business. There's been, I mean, this is the savings and loan crisis in the 80s when we were young. You had the long-term capital management thing in 1998. You had the 08 great financial crisis. You know, you've had a lot of these incidents. And so it's just the latest one, basically.
Now, we're talking to yeah. Ben Bry, who spent 20 years on Wall Street as an analyst, trader, and portfolio manager, and is also my older brother, about everything, trying to break down and demystify what happened so quickly with Silicon Valley Bank. And I guess, well, one thing I want, I read this over the weekend just as a quick side note. If you're not, Jane, if you're not going to put your money in a hole in your backyard, you could be like Giannis and spread it across 50 different banks. Supposedly he hits his threshold and then he
moves on
with another one. but I guess,
you know why? Because he doesn't trust banks because he's Greek. He's seen this before.
Yeah. And which, and I guess, is that a takeaway from this? Is not trust, like, what for the average consumer, what is the takeaway from this?
Well, that banks are not as safe as you think. Banks don't, so two things. Banks aren't paying you enough on your money relative to what the government's paying you. So they're ripping you off. Like, now they might give you services, so there's some value to that and you have to decide. But like, if you were to go to the government's website, treasurydirect.gov, you know, well, rates have come down a lot in the last couple of days, but the you can still get 4% plus, and that money's secured by the U.S. government. And so you're not having to worry about that. And if you put it in a bank, you can get 1, 2, maybe 3% in a CD, but you're not getting paid much, especially in your checking account. And so they better be giving you a mortgage, or like in the case of Silicon Valley, they were lending against your stock or doing something that helps you in order for you to justify why you would be there. But like, I think that it's like treasuries are much more interesting than banks, and especially for the excess amount over the top. And, you know, buying your home, I mean, in Italy and China and other countries, they use their home as their piggy bank. So they're like, I buy my home with cash, not a mortgage. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and they use their home as their savings. Like in Italy, the average Italian owns 1.5 homes. They don't trust banks there either.
Interesting. All right. Well, we got to take a break, but our guest is Ben Bry, my older brother, but also Wall Street analyst, trader, and portfolio manager. Because when we come back, I want to, because what I am having a hard time understanding is that you said that the depositors are going to be made whole, right?
Well, that's as far, I mean, this is a fluid situation, right? So as far as I know right now, they've come out and said that all the depositors are going to be made whole, and that the banks can get $100 or $1, like they can get their assets that are impaired because of interest rates made whole by the Fed, and then give that money out. Now, again, if everybody takes it out of the system, then you have other problems. But near term, yes, it seems that you can get your money out.
Okay, so my question when we come back is, how is that not the taxpayers who are paying for that? But don't answer now. We'll answer it when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art supporting artists in their own words.
Hey son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Never gave it without a compass. Eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, philosopher you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hey,
what's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
Hello?
Man, where are you? I thought you were coming.
I can't. I'm in bed with the flu.
The flu? Whoa. Grandma's about to crowd surf. Man, I'll call you back.
Don't get stuck at home with the flu. A flu shot is safe, effective, and you can get it at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. A flu shot is the best way to prevent the flu and its potentially serious complications. Don't get flu FOMO. Learn more at getmyflushot.org.
Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Kristen Bry, she is Jane Matinair, and we are on the phone with my older brother, Ben Bry, who has spent 20 years on Wall Street as an analyst, trader, and portfolio manager, and is explaining what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and how it may or may not affect us as consumers and not tech investors. And my question that I teed up before we went to break was, so it sounds like the government is stepping in, they're going to help out depositors, but it's not... But it's taxpayers are not paying for this?
Well, the Federal Reserve, look, again, this is all very live. The Federal Reserve is liquefying unliquid bonds at par. And so.
All right, say that in simpler terms.
Well, so, okay. So if you own a bond that has a 2% coupon from a couple of years ago, 10 years. Now that's worth maybe 70 to 80 cents. Well, independent. On Friday, it was worth like 80 cents maybe, okay? And so you can't get from the market the full dollar. Over time, assuming it doesn't default, you'll get made whole. But again, finance is about taking money from the present to the future and from the future to the present. That's the core function of finance. And so the central bank... Its role is to try and arrest panics, basically, because back before it was created in 1913, there was lots of panics. And J.P. Morgan was considered the central bank. He would bail it out when things would happen like this. But if you look at it in the days of the wildcat banking, which is essentially what's going on in crypto, it's kind of a wildcat banking time there. It would come and calm people down and make them whole in the hopes that like confidence was regained. Now, confidence is a tricky thing, right? If people panic and they're taking it out, I mean, this can cascade and it could be like a contagion situation. So right now it's these middle banks, business banks, but I just was talking to a guy in Bloomberg here. There's now currently 1, 2, 8 banks halted that aren't trading, which is bad. First Republic is down 75% today. PacWest, another California bank, Key Bank's down. So this is a bad situation as mm-hmm. we speak. And it's, again, it's different than 08, because in 08 it was the value of the assets the banks had were, it was bad assets. They lent money to the wrong people, and then they used leverage on it. This time, it's fine assets, but now that everybody's demanding liquidity, there's a lot of disruptive. It's very disruptive.
It's a run on the bank.
It's a run on the bank, but it's a run on all the banks. So, you know, the question is do you know your banker? Or do you want to be at JP Morgan? JP Morgan and Bank of America, they announced this morning that they would have to pay a tax for all the deposits they're going to get. Like because they want to socialize the losses, but they're going to have the banking system pay for it, as opposed to the taxers. So that answers your question as of now, but you never know, right? This is literally less than 24 hours old, and it's happening real time. And
yeah,
so ultimately, I think this ends with interest rates having to go down and money printing, or else a fairly ugly, you know, recession. I mean, it's probably going to be a recession anyways. We might already be in it, but you know, I don't think that they can keep interest rates where they are. So maybe you'll get to refi your mortgage at a lower rate.
And so I guess politically, are we still looking at, is that part kind of over as far as the split government and how the government's going to step in and do anything? Is that decision been made over the weekend, or is there still more decisions that need to be made?
I mean, I think they're going to watch and see how it goes. I mean, okay. I think you need to take a little data. I think they did some, but the market's clearly panicking right now. I mean, the move since last, and by the way, you always ask me what I do. this is when I do well. And I was betting that this would happen and then interest rates would drop. And we had the biggest drop.
But you were betting that Silicon Valley Bank would fail?
No, I wasn't. Oh, I was betting that there was going to be some serious issues and that interest rates would have to come much lower. And the market, like the U.S. 2-year has had the biggest move in like 30 years or something. It's 150 basis points, almost 140 basis points from where it was last week. Like, I mean, you have to remember Jay Powell, the head of the Fed, was telling Congress, in front of Congress, that they're going to raise rates by maybe 50 basis points and accelerate it. I mean, he has a lot of egg on his face now. It's like, look at what's going on. This is because of you guys. It's the Fed's fault. Like, they always raise rates until something breaks, and now something's clearly breaking.
Yeah.
Ben, caller at 844-967-2789. Karina wants to know if credit unions will be, are they in the same situation as banks?
Yeah, I mean, they're the same thing. It's they're, but they're locally owned. I mean, I tend to think that the smaller banks are a community, and as long as you don't have people freak out, they should be fine. But again, all these banks and credit unions have access to sell their assets so you can get your money. The question is does everybody want their money right now because they're scared? And if that's the case, there's not enough money, basically. So the downside scenario here is that everybody wants to put their money in Jane's backyard, or their backyard, maybe. And there's not enough money for it. And then the government has to backstop it. And then they're in this gigantic bailout. And the value of the dollar goes down. The value of gold goes up. Bitcoin's up 15% today, as an example. Gold is up 7%. I mean, there's like a lot of things that people are just getting money out of banks and putting them in securities that they trust. That's basically the bottom line of what's going on right now. So whether it's the Treasury, it's gold, it's Apple stock, you know, or a few other things, crypto, because it's an alternative system. That's kind of the situation at the moment.
Man. Feels a little bleak, but I'm happy you were here to try to explain it to us. And as you said, it's a developing story, so hopefully we can get you back as things progress.
Yeah,
I know that the Consumer Price Index is dropping tomorrow after a jobs report on Friday. And so there's certainly a lot of stuff about the market that we could have you come back and talk to us about. So thank you, big brother, for joining us. We'll have you back soon. Enjoy the warm weather that we currently do not have, but that's okay.
All right,
Ben Bright, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
All right. Well, that does it for the second hour. When we come back, we will have a debate on daylight savings time, which... should we switch to one? Should we switch to the other? Should we just keep doing what we're doing and just suck it up twice a year? You let us know. 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus.
Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your place for this area's